nonprofit part of Chico State.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Okay, real good. And is high cap the same thing?
Yeah, so look, I can kind of give you an overview of how we work. So Passages, again, a direct service program of California State University Chico at Chico State Enterprises. And we have a number of designations, and the designations kind of coincide with our funding sources. So we are the designated area agency on aging. And that designation encompasses a service area of Butte, Glen, Plumas, Tehama, and Colusa counties. And with that, we do services for older adults that would include things from nutrition for older adults, both at congregate settings and home-delivered meals, programs such as HICAP, which is the Health Insurance Counseling and Advocacy Program. We also do a program called the Multipurpose Senior Services Program, which is a Medi-Cal waiver program helping older adults remain in their homes. We do caregiver services, volunteer services, long-term care ombudsman, and let's see, information and assistance. We support, to some degree, legal services throughout the North State. So if I could, you know, summarize it, is the one thing all of our services has in common is that we serve older adults throughout the region. The specific services can be varied and different. So, you know, from senior nutrition to Medicare counseling, both of them serve older adults, but they can be very different programs.
Got it. And so I know that when I was getting on Medicare, I think I talked to somebody there. So anyone that is looking at getting on Medicare can get some counseling on that.
Yeah, absolutely. The program works with people that are what we would call beneficiaries, those who are eligible for Medicare, those who are new to Medicare. So in other words, you're turning 65 this year, you're coming into Medicare. And those that have been in Medicare for many years, because each year there's a renewal of your Medicare services, and sometimes there's plan changes in the region. And so people will come back to us on an annual basis to review their plans, and we work with them to try and point them in the right direction, look at some options with them. We don't tell them which plans to pick, but what we do is try and provide some insight to those plans and what those decisions might be.
Okay. Some of the other services, there are some financial requirements in order to participate. Is that how that would work?
Well, no, generally all the services and Passages are at no cost. And that's based on our federal and state grant funding. So that's, I guess, the bonus for anyone in the community, that our services are free and there's no obligation. We do, and we are required to, for many of our programs, ask for a voluntary contribution. But again, it's a voluntary thing. It's a really very low pressure. Essentially, we just provide the opportunity, but no one is required to make a donation, and there is no charge for any of our services.
So you're an elderly person and you feel as though you need some help in certain ways, you would contact Passages, and then you could counsel and kind of guide on what they need and what you offer?
Yeah, I would say the way most people come to Passages is if they hear about us, they call, and our information and assistance line, our folks will take the call, chat with them, and then we try and refer them to services either within Passages, or we refer them to services anywhere within our community that they might have a need. And then if we refer them internally, it really depends. There are some eligibility requirements, so not so much financial requirements. Okay. And I would say on the financial, we are required to target those in the greatest economic need. And also essentially what we say is like low income and minority. We do target that population, but by no means do we limit it. Anyone that wants to call and has a need for our services, we're available to help.
But you do have to be elderly.
You do have to, generally, you have to be over the age of 60. Some of our programs might be 65. One of our programs, it's a volunteer program through what they call AmeriCorps Senior. And that program provides volunteer opportunities for older adults. And we serve in classrooms, or we serve as like companions to older adults in the community. And that program, you can be as young as 55 and get on.
And you do a training for that?
Yeah, that one does a training, and we also provide a non-taxable stipend to those folks. So they're able to have a little financial support. And that one, they do have to qualify based on income.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and like I said, I have a woman that I take care of, or she's part of my life. And Passages has been wonderful for her in that a nurse checks on her, sees what she needs. They set her up with the help, I've fallen and I can't get up, whatever they call that button.
Yes. Yeah, that is, based on your description, that is our multi-purpose senior service program. And so in that program, what it is actually, it's what they call a Medi-Cal waiver program. And so every person that is on that program is eligible for Medi-Cal. And they're also certified to be in a skilled nursing facility. So in other words, their activities of daily living set them up that they could actually reside in a skilled nursing facility. And what's neat about the program is that it enables us to provide what they call care management services. We arrange a variety of services for them, which includes an assessment by a nurse annually and also a social worker, a care manager that finds a variety of services to support them in their home. And we've had clients on that program for over 10 years. And so when you think about it, that could have been 10 years of somebody living in a skilled nursing facility, and it's 10 years of somebody living where they choose to live in their home. So it's a wonderful program.
And then I really appreciate that help about the Medicare. That was, for me, really helpful to show me what the supplementals are and which one would be good for me and those kind of things. And I mean, I think, you know, anybody looking at getting Medicare, it's a good thing to contact Passages for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things I would say about that program, we refer to it in simpler terms. We call it Medicare counseling because primarily that's what it is. But it's Medicare and other insurance counseling. You know, Medicare is a wonderful program, but it is complicated. And, you know, in the Chico area, we've had lots of retired professors from Chico State come to us. And, you know, here's somebody that has a PhD, and they can use help with navigating Medicare. So it can be a complicated program. And the thing is that there's some decisions that are made that if you haven't done it before, that they could have an effect on your healthcare, on the types of services you need. So it's nice to have a counsel that just kind of walks you through, helps you navigate that program. Again, making a decision that works best for you and your family. And anecdotally, we've had, you know, folks from time to time come in and they signed up for a plan that they thought would work and didn't really cover maybe some of the critical things that they needed, but through the process, they just kind of missed it. And so if we catch those folks early enough, there's an opportunity to sign up for a new plan, usually like within the first 30 days. But it can be a real benefit to people. And it's one that I'd say, you know, we're very proud of. We've saved folks funding, you know, saved them money sometimes. But I think most importantly, we got them the Medicare plan that best suits their needs.
Yeah, and that's tricky when you're looking at it. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk about a little bit about was the ombudsman program. Are those volunteers? And an ombudsman, what is that?
Yeah, thank you. Well, it's a lot of name, but to yeah. Narrow it down, what it is, ombudsmen advocate for older adults who live in skilled nursing facilities and residential care facilities. And the reason this is important is they've done some studies and such, there's some statistics, but about 50% of the people living in skilled nursing do not receive a regular visitor. In other words, they're there on their own, they're living. And oftentimes people are living in a frail state, not always, but the ombudsman is there to advocate for them. And so one of the things that is an important distinction is that the ombudsman is an advocate for the resident. So they're not an advocate for the facility. They're not necessarily an advocate for the family. They're an advocate for the individual. Sometimes people, when they're in skilled nursing, there's a perception that, well, they're in a level of institutional care that they can't care for themselves. But the reality of it is, and the way the ombudsman view it is, these are residents, that's their home. They have all sorts of rights, just like anyone living at their home in the community, you have rights. And so it's kind of getting a balance there. The complaints that we'll respond to can be very simple. It could be as simple as, I don't like the food, the coffee comes to me cold. But it could be something much more severe. It It could be, you know, a physical abuse within the facility. It could be patient on patient. It could be financial abuse that's going on with maybe somebody outside the facility. And so what they do is they respond to complaints from residents. They get permission, and then they open up an investigation. They look in it. They try and resolve the issue between the residents and any party involved. If it gets to be something really complicated, that essentially we will refer that case to state licensing if need be. But we try and really be that first line of communication with the residents and try and work with them to resolve the problems. And you know, it can be challenging because there's lots of factors involved with someone in a skilled nursing facility, from the facility, a discharge, payments, family members, or stuff going on in the facility. So there's just a myriad of things that are going on. And really, they're there just to advocate for the best interest of the resident.
And so are they there so the resident could approach them? How does a resident know about it?
Yeah, certainly. So one of the ways that we do this is that by law, we're required, we have posters that are posted inside each of the facilities. And it's a big poster with an 800 number that you can call the ombudsman office. In addition, we do what we like to refer to as a preventative presence, is that we have our ombudsman go into the facilities on a regular basis with a badge. And all the ombudsmen are certified. They go through training. We have background checks on them. And this way, the ombudsman is in the facility, that the residents at least would have an idea that, hey, who was this person walking around with this badge? But they know who that person is, and so they're more comfortable to approach them. Mm-hmm. So I'd say some of the more recent challenges that we had was during the pandemic, we had the shutdown of the facilities. And in the first 6 months of the pandemic, the ombudsman were not considered essential workers, and the state did not allow them into the facility. And this was really concerning for us and for our ombudsman staff, because there's still stuff going on in facilities. Residents still need to have advocacy, and we had very little access to them. We could call into the facility to see if there were any issues, but we really didn't have connection with the residents. So through our state association, we pulled some data and some research. And what we found was that in the compared year to year, the first year of the pandemic, which was up until June of 2020, we compared that data with the data from June of 2019. And what we found is that there was a 50% reduction in complaints filed to the ombudsman program in that 1 year time. And I'd like to emphasize is that the complaints didn't go down because things were better in the facilities. The complaints went down because we weren't allowed in. So after that, we were able to work with the state licensing, Department of Public Health, and we were able to enter the facilities under very strict guidelines. So it was a big process, but throughout the state, all of the ombudsman programs felt it was absolutely necessary. And we were able to get in and we're able to provide advocacy for those folks. And I think, as probably a lot of your listeners will know, that the pandemic was particularly harmful to older adults first. Yeah. It was primarily those affected by hospitalizations, ICU beds, and death were older adults. And then we had horrific issues within facilities. And the fact that they live in close quarters and older adults are most vulnerable to the pandemic and COVID-19, it just had devastating effects. Mm-hmm. So we really felt strongly that we needed to be in there advocating for them to ensure that their rights were being represented. So it's a wonderful program. And I think you had asked the question earlier, how do we do it? We had worked with volunteers extensively pre-pandemic. We probably had 20 volunteers in our 5-county region. Due to the pandemic, volunteers were excluded from going into the facilities. And so we actually lost a lot of our volunteers. And part of the reason is volunteers have requirements for ongoing training, and the fact that they weren't going in and we weren't getting the ongoing training. So now we're in the process of hoping that we're coming back from this pandemic and we're beginning to address the issue of recruiting and bringing volunteers back on, because we have a huge service area. We have staff, but we definitely need volunteers to help. So generally, it's a combination of paid staff and volunteers in the community.
You're listening to a pre-recorded interview with Joe Cobery, Director of Passages, the Area Agency on Aging. Stay tuned to 90.1 FM, KZFR Chico, and North State Give and Take. Back to my pre-recorded interview with Joe Cobery, the Director of Passages. And how long does the training take?
36 hours total training and then ongoing 12 hours each year. So yeah, so we'll train them. It takes about 3 weeks to get them trained. They can do some home study, but we do in-person training, or during the pandemic, the training's been going on via Zoom.
What are some of the other things that you've
Yeah, sure. So, well, we've got a couple opportunities. So ombudsman, which is, you know, people volunteering in the community, our Medicare counseling or the HICAP program that we've talked about quite a bit. We also use counselors in that program. And similarly, they go through a training and they're very good. Another program that I would love to talk to you about is our volunteer programs through AmeriCorps Senior. And this is a unique program. And I mentioned it earlier, is that these are older adults beginning at age 55. They're eligible. They are screened based on their income because we are required to recruit older adults with lower income for this program. But it's unique in that the client is the volunteer. Where in my ombudsman program, in my HICAP Medicare counseling program, they're just truly volunteers. But in this AmeriCorps Senior program, they are the client. And what the studies have found is that older adults who are engaged in volunteer activities report a better quality of life. Their life expectancy is extended. And so everything that we do in that program is about the volunteer. But the other side of the coin, which is a great benefit for the community, is they're providing a service to the community. So it's a win-win. And so there's two areas that we work with in this program. And one of them is called foster grandparents. Mm-hmm. And essentially what they are is they work in local schools and they, in a sense, act as a foster grandparent, but it's literacy based. And so they're in the classrooms. You could describe them in a sense as a teacher's aide, but not in the traditional sense. It's very focused. But they're out in the community, they're in the schools, they're working with the teacher and they're working with the students, and they're providing support to them. The other one that we do on that program is called Senior Companions. And there we're putting senior companions into the community, working with other older adults that are in their home. And so they might provide some transportation, they might help them with some light, you know, housework, maybe helping them with dishes or folding laundry, limited meal preparation, but they're providing companionship for the older adult in their home. And it's important to remember that, you know, a lot of older adults get into a situation where they are in their home and they may not have transportation, don't have the ability to drive. They don't live in walking distance to a bus stop. And so they can, you know, be shut in and isolated. And the senior companion provides that lifeline, that ability to come in and connect with them. And so it's a neat program. And in both these programs I mentioned earlier, they are eligible for a stipend. And what's cool about this stipend is that it's a non-taxable stipend. So older adults that might be lower income living in a senior housing complex and their rent is based on their income, this stipend doesn't go against them as being considered income. Now, it is a stipend, so it's not an hourly wage, so to speak. But nonetheless, it gives them some support for them to be able to volunteer in the community.
Sure. Do you have any training set, some time set for the HICAP or either one, any trainings coming up?
Yes, we do those on a regular basis. Right now, I don't have any set, but when we do, we always advertise on various, television, radio, newspaper. And again, we're living in a world where we have the pre-pandemic world where I could have told you exactly when we'd be doing these. And now we're in this transition to post-pandemic, and we're kind of relearning all of our steps as we get back into this. So at this time, I don't have any specific dates, but we do anticipate normally in the fall, we do a training. So I think at this point, that would be the soonest that we would have one in place.
Okay.
And then lastly, I just want to mention there's a new program that we're just implementing, which is a straight volunteer program. It's not based on income or anything. There's no stipend involved with it, but it's called RSVP. And it's just volunteer opportunities for people, older adults in the community. And what we do is we act as kind of a clearinghouse to work with them to try and find volunteer opportunities for them in the community. So again, that's it's AmeriCorps Senior, and it's called the RSVP program, which stood for Retired Service Volunteer Program.
Okay. And they could go into any nonprofit organization like KZFR or Boys and Girls
Club. And what we do is we work with them to try and help do background checks and such, and then try and work with them to connect them with volunteer opportunities in the community.
Oh, that's neat. Do a lot of people take advantage of it?
Well, it's a fairly new program, but yes, we've had great response to it.
Good. Yeah. And that is so much a part of it. Like, what do you do with your time?
Yes.
sometimes it's a little hard to go out there by yourself and say, here I am, I want to volunteer. So that's helpful.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about one of the programs that has been huge and growing over the last few years is the Family Caregiver Support Program. And so caregiving, and it's gained a lot of notoriety in recent years. You hear it on television, radio, you'll hear government officials talking about it. But essentially, you know, the caregiver, the person caring for a loved one that's in their home, family member, or sometimes a neighbor, the program is designed to give that caregiver support. And so oftentimes, caregivers will not self-identify that they have any issues or problems. I have a 91-year-old mother who lives in Los Angeles who is a caregiver to my father, who's 92, and she's one of these typical caregivers that insists that she doesn't need any help, that all the help would need to go toward her spouse. But, you know, studies have found that caregivers have high incidences of burnout. About 30% of caregivers pass away before the one who's receiving care. Yeah. There's incidence of stress, smoking, binge drinking. So caregivers are definitely in need. And so this program is neat because it provides support to the family caregiver. And through that support, they're also benefiting and also helping the one that's receiving the care. So we do things as an example of, we have family consultants that work with them. So we're able to check in with them on a regular basis. We offer support groups for the caregivers. We are able to offer respite for caregivers. In some cases, we can provide limited access to counseling and to legal services. We've also done minor home modifications. So sometimes it's putting a ramp into a home or widening a doorway or putting grab bars into the shower. So there's a lot of different things that we can do in support of that caregiver, which has an end benefit of the care receiver.
Yeah. They're so the unsung heroes, I know, and they don't feel like they need it.
Yes.
I know.
And then I would say, lastly, you know, other programs that we run. Now, we do a lot of the programs directly for the community, but some of the programs that we actually use subcontractors for are our senior nutrition programs. And so, again, we have congregate meal programs where people are receiving meals in a congregate setting. And then we also have home-delivered meal programs where we're able to provide meals directly to the home. Now, you can only imagine during the pandemic how challenging that was. Our yes. congregate sites all were shut down. And so we scrambled. We came up with some alternatives, what we called a to-go program, where people would show up and we could hand them the meals and they could go. We had a lot of demand for our home-delivered meal program. And so those were impacted and full. We probably served more meals during the pandemic than we had ever served before. And it was really revealing of the needs of older adults out in the communities. And like so many of us who were struggling about grocery stores and what have you, it really just compounded and our numbers skyrocketed. And luckily, we had a lot of support from the state of California and from the federal government where we were able to meet that need. And the thing that's happened since the pandemic is we still have a high volume, though, now of people interested in our food and our meal programs. And really, it just comes down to is that I think these people always existed. The pandemic kind of helped bring aging issues to the surface. And right now in the state of California, we have a lot of attention going to aging. The governor approved, and we're in the first year of what they're calling a master plan on aging and looking at the coordination of services for older adults throughout the state of California. It's a big project with bold mm-hmm. goals and initiatives. But we're looking at implementing this at the local level, and it's going to be about a 10-year process. But the idea is to really, how do we align these services to ensure that there's no wrong door for any person that's looking for services for older adults? Yes. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, it's looking at aging as a lifelong process. We're all born and we begin to age, and God willing, we're all going to get to that point where we're over 55, we're over 60, we're over 70, we're over 80. Mm-hmm. And we just want to make sure that the services and supports are there so people can continue to contribute to their community in their older age yeah. and have a quality of life that's befitting them.
Yeah. And if anybody's interested, they can call you.
Yes. Yeah. And that is the easiest way. We can see people by appointment. We, again, due to the pandemic, we have been limited on open access. But we do take people if they needed to have a meeting. We can do that. And the best way is to call us. We have a local number, which is 530-898- 5923. And then we also have an 800 number, and that is 800-822-0109.
Okay.
Also, I'd emphasize you can take a look at all of our services on our webpage. It's passagescenter.org. And we have a full list of our services, ways to contact us, events and such that we're supporting and promoting in the community.
Yes, I did look at the website. It's good. There's so much there to look at.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's good. And do you do fundraising events?
We do some. We usually do an annual appeal. But other than that, our services are free. We do have people that donate to us on a regular basis, and, mm-hmm. and we're so appreciative of it.
Yeah.
We do have an endowment that we use. And the idea of this endowment is to ensure that passages will be here for generations to come.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we get donations, you know, we can accept them for needs that are immediate. Or if somebody wanted to do more of a legacy gift for long term, we put that away. And it's actually managed through the CSU Chico Foundation. And so professionally managed, people's funds are secured and taken care of and, mm-hmm. and applied appropriately.
And I'm sure the website has information about that if people are interested.
Yes.
Well, good, Joe. Thanks. Gosh, good conversation.
Yeah, well, thank you. It was a pleasure to meet you. And I'm glad to share the services we do.
Yes.
I would say I definitely have a real passion for it. I feel fortunate as I'm on my aging journey that there are programs and supports like this for myself when I need them.
Well, I appreciate you and I appreciate talking to you. Joe Cobery, thank you for talking to me about passages.
Thank you.
This has been a pre-recorded interview with Joe Cobery, the director of Passages, the Area Agency on Aging. If you'd like to hear it again, tune in on Thursday at 5 p.m. or go to the website, kzfr.org, and go to Tuesday and go to North State Give and Take, and it is archived there. And you're listening to 90.1 FM KZFR Chico. My name is Bobby Tryon, and the show is North State Give and Take.
Hey there, my name is Cohen Morano, and I am filling in today for Ginger, and I'm covering, I've been thinking about this for the last minute, and I still ended up getting my words jumbled and confused. Okay, let's start this from the beginning. Hey there, welcome to Radioactive. Typically this show is hosted by Ginger, but today I'm going to be filling in for her. My name is Cohen Morano. I host a show on Friday nights at the same exact time called Left to Passage. Typically a variety show. I try to play a variety of music, and from what I've understood by talking to Ginger, is she also likes to keep it variety as well. But that being said, I decided today we were just going to be playing some soul, R&B, and other stuff kind of around that area today. A mix of some older stuff, a mix of some newer stuff, some stuff you might know, some stuff you might not. Yeah, and I hope you end up hearing something that you enjoy. At least that was my idea with it. Ginger told me that recently she's been playing a lot of 70s and 80s rock. However, according to the page on her website, the KZFR website about her show, it also mentioned some soul and R&B. So hopefully this isn't too unusual for the program. Anyways, I hope you all enjoy. We're going to be starting in a minute with Is It a Crime by Sade off of Promise. But we're going to be going into some older stuff after that, so it'll be worth sticking around. Anyways, before we hop into it, I want to say that Radioactive is... I just realized I had a promo I was supposed to play. I'll play it later. Radioactive is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Alternative Energy Systems, providing sustainable energy for life. Alternative Energy Systems offers solar, battery storage, and whole home generator solutions. More information at 345-6980 or visit savingenergyforlife.com. We're also made possible by Robert Amendola and Associates.